From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, full moon, open lines. Anything could happen. Here's what's happening. Google is tightening its privacy leash on employees in an effort to ensure that they don't intrude on people while the internet search leader collects and stores information about you. Google said it will require all 23,000 of its employees to undergo privacy training. The company also is introducing more checks aimed at making sure that the workers are obeying the rules. Google's tougher privacy measures appear to be a response to recent breaches that have been raised about questions about the company's internal controls and policies. Regulators shut down a total of 7 banks in Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kansas, and Arizona, lifting to 139 now the number of U.S. banks that have fallen this year. More will happen as soured loans have mounted and the economy has sputtered. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation took over the banks, the largest of which by far was the Hillcrest Bank, based in Overland Park, Kansas, $1.6 billion in assets. Japanese automaker Honda Motor announced the recall of nearly 528,000 vehicles worldwide due to a defect with the cylinder that holds brake fluid. The recall comes a day after Toyota announced a safety recall of about 1.5 million vehicles worldwide to fix a brake fluid leak that it warned can gradually diminish braking performance. That's not good. Actor Randy Quaid told Canadians' Immigration Board that he and his wife are seeking asylum from the murderers of Hollywood, and they will apply for refuge status in Canada after they were arrested on U.S. warrants related to vandalism charges. The Quaids are wanted in Santa Barbara, and they missed a court hearing Monday on felony vandalism charges. The Quaids were ordered release from custody on Friday, but must post $9,750 bail and fulfill their promise to appear for their next hearing Thursday. As many as 1 in 3 U.S. adults could have diabetes by 2050, according to federal officials, a dramatic new projection that represents a threefold increase. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 1 in 5 have diabetes now, but that the number could grow to 1 in 5 or 1 in 3 by mid-century if current trends continue. Dr. Marvin Hausman with us. Marvin, this is a bad trend. Why is it going to grow like that?
Because of the economic impact, the social impact, people are getting fatter. There are 3 factors that do it. One is that they're overweight. The other one is that we have a larger minority group, which has a higher risk genetically of developing diabetes. And the other factor is that we're living longer. So all 3 factors are causing an increase in epidemic proportions of diabetes.
How serious is this?
Well, the economic impact in 2002 was $132 billion a year in the U.S. It's now up to $174 billion. And 14% of the adult population has diabetes. It's going to increase, as you said, to 33% by the middle of this century. We have to do something about it.
Marvin, type 2 diabetes can be controlled by losing a lot of weight.
Yes, that's one factor. There's no question about it that weight is involved, but there are many other factors. Vitamin D deficiency is a very important factor in diabetes, and it's been overlooked. Some people say that the D in diabetes is for the D in the vitamin.
All right, very good. Thanks, Marvin. Diabetes, by the way, is a disease in which the body has trouble processing sugar. It was the nation's 7th leading cause of death in 2007. A woman drove for months with a dead body in her passenger seat. I'm saying 4 months. And medical examiners have identified a mummified corpse that was left in a car passenger seat for 10 months in Southern California. Can you believe this? The Orange County Coroner's Office was able to rehydrate the body's fingertips in order to obtain a usable fingerprint to identify the victim or the person who died. The woman's remains discovered in this car parked illegally in Costa Mesa are little more than skin and bones, and they weigh about 30 pounds. Man, what a story. For decades, award-winning writer Brad Steiger has devoted his life to exploring the unusual Up next, we'll talk about real monsters, gruesome critters, and beasts from the dark side. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Knorr. You know, monsters have been spotted everywhere, not just slithering under a child's bed or lurking in the closet. They're all over the place. Tonight, Brad Steiger joins us for a couple hours as we talk about real monsters, gruesome critters, and beasts from the dark side. Brad, as I mentioned, for 5 decades, award-winning writer, has been devoting his career to exploring and examining the unusual, hidden, secret, and otherwise strange occurrences. He grew up in a home where ghostly phenomena was a very common occurrence and has achieved a balanced attitude towards ghosts and hauntings that have served him well during his 50-plus years of paranormal research. Here he is, back on Coast to Coast, regular Brad Steiger. Brad, how are you?
I am fine, George. Great to be with you tonight during the full moon.
You timed it this way, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Who knows what will happen on the full moon?
You have, you've written, what, about 170-plus books by now, haven't you?
Yeah, 170.
You've got to be, Brad, the most prolific author out there.
Yeah, I think so. Hans Holzer, who, you know, one of the pioneers who passed away about a year ago, he was awfully close, or maybe we tied. I can't remember now, but it has been a long, happy adventure exploring an endless number of phenomena. And, you know, I guess we all like monsters. We've, you know, you and I have talked about, we kind of especially like werewolves. But, you know, they all have an attraction for us. And why not? I think they're in our genes. They're in our subconscious, our universal consciousness. Think what it was like for Neolithic humans to go out after dark with only moonlight. Where's that saber-toothed tiger? There were other species roaming around at that time. We have Neanderthal, we have Homo sapiens, we have other homonyms that are showing up. And, you know, I think we've demonstrated over the years that probably Homo sapiens and Neanderthal ate each other. So there's another two-legged monster that could be the antecedent of the werewolf or some of the other creatures. Plus, we know on Franco-Cambrian caves, you know, 20,000 years ago, 12,000 years ago, whichever yardstick you prefer, they were drawing half-man, half-animal creatures. So in a sense, the monster has always been with us, always, you know, since the earliest days of our human experience.
What is it about monsters, Brad, that scares everybody? I mean, since our childhood, as you say in your book, monsters are everywhere, a child's bed, in a closet, you name it. We're scared of monsters. How come?
Well, I think we are conditioned to. I think it's part of the survival instinct. I know we had to have this extra sense, or we would not have survived as a species. We had much better smell. We had probably much better sight in the Neolithic period, at the very beginning of our existence. And we have been conditioned to know that if you go out walking, and I'd say, think of what it was like before street lamps, before lights in windows. Think it was like to go out when it was really dark and only the moon, when you couldn't see and something rustles in the bushes. Now, the idea of the wild man or the man of the woods, or today we call him Sasquatch or Bigfoot, that's been with us since we began writing stories and telling stories and making cave paintings. So this idea, I think, is just firmly entrenched. And now we go to the movies, and we love being scared because we know now, hopefully, that the monster will stay on the screen or the monster will stay in the book.
And doesn't come through the screen.
No. But then when we're home and we're walking from the garage to the house, and we hear something knock over the garbage can in the alley, we say, all those scenes we saw in that monster movie come back, and we say, good Lord, it did follow me home. And, you know, we walk a little faster. We want to be very cool and civilized about it, but we walk just a little faster. Maybe the hand is trembling a little bit when it puts the key in the lock. Because could that be? I mean, can it be? We know that evolution has taken many strange divisions, maybe many strange diversions. Are there really half man, half wolves? Are there really Bigfoot out there? People see them. Reasonable people see them. They take pictures of them. Maybe. But they see them. They see them. And the new book is just full of accounts, new accounts from people that have seen these. And they're down-to-earth people. Many of them have military backgrounds. Many of them have law enforcement backgrounds.
You've got about 250 ghost, ghost and monster stories.
Ghost and monster stories, covering the complete range. This time in this book, you know, I've done real werewolves, I've done real vampires, real zombies, just real monsters. I mean, I just wanted to cover as complete a canvas as possible. And I, you know, it's been so gratifying to me to get emails from dear old friends like Timothy Green Beckley, who says, hey, man, I think this is one of your best books yet.
Super. He was just on the show just a few days ago, Brad.
Yeah. And then relatively new friends writing reviews like Nick Redfern, who said that when he was 10 years old, he was reading my books with a flashlight under the cover when his parents thought he was sleeping. But now he writes the review. And he says, I think this is one of Steiger's, you know, best books yet. And that is so gratifying, you know, to hear from your colleagues, from those who are in the same striving in the same vineyard that you are, to hear that kind of approval come through. And this has been very gratifying to me. Plus all the people, you know, wonderful people who have contributed their stories. And what I did in this book, you know, for 55 years, I've been interviewing people and having their interviews. I thought this time, what the heck? Let them tell their own stories. I'll do the introduction. And it was just maybe a modest amount of editing. I've given them credit for their own adventures, their own stories, and put their own pictures in to say that, you know, prove that I'm not making up fictional people. Here are the people who have had the stories, who have had the encounters, who have had the adventures. And people are responding to that, too. And you know, there's all kinds of where you can click on and see the original or write to the individual with their website and so forth, or their email.
Well, whatever happened to these people, Brad, they actually believe it was real. And, and to me, that's the important part of all of this.
And they didn't start out that way, most of them. Most of them didn't believe in any of these things. And then they had the encounter. And that's what I've said so often. You know, when I started out years and years ago, I came from an academic background. And everything had to be proved. So I just spent endless hours sitting with my colleagues, you know, around the coffee table afterwards with the biology department and the physics department, arguing and proving and trying to prove. And I realized, until you've had such experience, you know, maybe you can't make that intellectual leap. Maybe there's too great a chasm. It's kind of like explaining love to someone who's never fallen in love. How do you really explain? So many of these are mystical experiences. So many of these, I say, are paraphysical.
How do you explain color to a blind person who was born blind?
Exactly. Yeah. So here are the stories for the people to judge. You see, in many, many cases, the individual who had the experience, and you hear the honesty And sometimes the fear that comes through after so many years of having such and such an encounter.
Fear with most of them, Brad, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I've, you know, people laugh when they see my chapter title, you know, the boogeyman isn't just under your bed, you know, because I think, and there's been so many great stories of, you know, okay, we've always had, and we'll always have kids that say, Daddy, Daddy, come in here. The boogeyman's in the closet, and then you pacify them. But in a number of cases that I put in the book, there really was a boogeyman in the closet. Mm-hmm. There really was a boogeyman under the bed that grabbed the child and pulled the child under the bed. You know, that type of thing. What are we dealing with? And again, I say most of these entities are probably paraphysical, other dimensional. They're here for a time and very physical for a time, and then maybe they go back to that vortex or that other dimension. Now, Bigfoot hunters, and I have some...
You've got a couple Bigfoot stories there.
Yeah, and, you know, some very good friends of mine are totally believe that these are physical beings, that these are great apes that once were in the North American continent.
Yeah, I think they are too. I don't know what they are, but I think
they're
physical.
I don't either.
I don't think they're dimensional or anything like that.
Well, I think they're both.
Do you?
I think they're both. I think we do have, because back in the day, George, I tracked the Bigfoot from Tennessee Valley Authority all the way across the Midwest, all to the Southwest. Those were the days, you know, when hiking and exploring and that type of situation, you know, was thrilling and invigorating. Maybe now not so much. I'll leave it to the younger ones to go out and explore. But, you know, time and time again, we found the scat, we found the feces, we found some hair, we had that examined. Many times we had the entity cornered. We heard the noises. We heard the growls, but we never found the entity. We never found the actual being. And then there's that fateful night. Many of the listeners won't remember the name Ivan T. Sanderson, but he was the Jack Hanna of his day.
Yeah, a giant of his moment.
Right. He would go on the Gary Moore show with different animals and so forth, and he had as his mission to find proof of Bigfoot. So I knew that he and Bernard Havelmans were going on an expedition to northern Minnesota. Now, this is way back in the 60s. And late one night, I got a phone call. And just like, you know, a B-movie, I could hear the wind howling in the background. And it was obviously a payphone. And Ivan's voice says, my boy, I have found what I have been seeking. We have proof of Bigfoot. We have a body. Well, what happened to that? Then suddenly, it's being shown in a carnival, and people are smelling the offensive odor of dead meat, and they look underwards, and there's a bunch of steak rotting, and then they look closely and say, oh, this is a plastic mask. Now, obviously, a substitution took place. Ivan and Bernard were, you know, skilled zoologists. They're not going to be deceived by a plastic mask and a fur coat and stinking meat. What happened? And I know this was a thorn in the flesh for Ivan until he passed. So we have always, I mean, we had a couple years ago, individuals who said, we've got him, and press conferences are called. And again, we're left with plastic masks and stinking meat. So again, you know, to say, go out and shoot it, good Lord, no. But I think here again, we are seeing, maybe there was a big ape, a giant ape, giganticus, on this continent. But maybe now we're seeing its ghosts. Maybe what we're seeing are ghosts of these giant apes that once lived on this continent.
Well, you've got many stories and real monsters, Brad. We're going to go through some of them when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM at Brad's website. Brad and Sherry. Sherry's his wife, of course. BradandSherry.com is his website. We'll be back in a moment as we get into real monsters, gruesome critters, and beasts from the dark side. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Brad Steiger and some of your ghostly stories later on tonight. Full Moon Open Lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Brad, let's get into some of these incredible stories here that you've got in the book. Of course, we talked about Bigfoot. You call Bigfoot in one of the chapters North America's King Kong.
Right.
So you think it's an ape?
Well, I don't know. The description is certainly ape-like. If we really stretch ourselves here, and George, I know you've done this. You're an old pro when it comes to Bigfoot hunting, and it certainly is ape-like in appearance, but yet it is human in appearance as well. So again, it appears to be as though it is some cross, and like I say, like a living ancestor of ours. Now, I have to tell a very quick story of when we found we had been blighted here in Iowa with a number of cases where livestock were just found, you know, something had picked up calves and just ripped them in half and mm-hmm. then eaten some and dropped them. And that's kind of one of the signatures of the Bigfoot. Well, there on some barbed wire, we found a big tuft of hair. Now, my associate at that time was a former policeman, a former private detective, also a former member of Special Forces, and we said, we've got it. Now, he said, you know, a professor at one of the universities owes me a favor. He says, I'm going to take it in and get an analysis, you know, from someone who should know and be able to identify what this hair is. So we brought it to him, left it, said, come back in a few days. We came back in a few days, and he was furious. He ordered us out of the office. Now, he didn't know me. He knew my friend. And he said, I told you in any of your private detective cases, I would never testify in a divorce case. We said, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? And he says, well, obviously you got this from the sheets or the mattress or whatever of one of your clients checking on a wife or a husband or whatever. And he said, no, no, no. And I said, just tell us, please. And he said, well, it's human, but, well, it isn't. But just get out of here. So that was the closest we got to having some kind of explanation, is that it's humanoid or homonym or whatever you want to say. And I think we've had this in so many instances. Now, the cases, you know, of the pictures in the Patterson, Gimlin, and so forth, we'll be arguing about that, you know, probably for another couple decades. Some say it's phony and Planet of the Apes makeup, and then others, you know, swear that it's the Russian team that's taking it frame by frame and demonstrating that it is a creature. And I think that's what we're left with, George, is a creature that appears human-like but also appears ape-like. And again, because of finding so much evidence, as I said before, the feces, the hair, and so forth, and the remains of the animals, but never finding the creature, I think it's most of them, some of them, have to be paraphysical. The same way with the big cats, which I've always been fascinated with. The panthers, the jaguar, the African lions that appear in New England villages. People look out their window at night and there's an African lion walking down the street of a New England village. Last year in New York, someone seeing a lion, and that same day they saw a coyote skating across the ice in Central Park. I mean, animals are misplaced.
Sure.
And I have this fantasy of an animal, let's say, a jaguar that leaps from a tree in South America and somehow lands in Florida or somehow lands in South Dakota? Are there vortexes, are there vortices scattered throughout through which these animals may, you know, without any knowledge, we can't say they're evil spirits or demonic, but they are innocent victims of these kind of vortices. We have these animals, correct? Now, again, of course, the Black Panther, strictly speaking, that's a thing as the Black Panther. They're jaguars in that pattern, that interesting pattern they have, and they have more melanin. And so they become, you just see the black. You can't really see the pattern anymore. And they're popping up all over. And 2 years ago, they were being seen throughout France and throughout the Netherlands. Now, we know that in historical times, there are no great cats in Europe. A type of lion got as far north as Denmark, but that we have found no evidence, no remains of any large cat creature in another historic era that indicates that there were ever big cats in Europe. But they were seen all over. They were seen in vineyards. There were people seen driving. Now, again, how much of that is, you know, power of suggestion? But then there are the cat people. And I've got an incredible case that still gives me the shivers of this guy who's changing a tire in an Illinois park. And he looks over his shoulder, and there's a cat, a huge cat creature standing on its hind legs. And luckily for him,
it didn't pounce on him, did it?
It didn't pounce on him. It was as, I guess, became as frightened, or other traffic came and it ran off. But these cases I receive all the time from really down to earth people who have nothing to gain. And, you know, I follow through as best I can, and they provide the feedback as best they can. But these stories also make the press. And I have, in each case, wherever I can, I have the original, or at least the source, where you can examine the original reports and the original cases. So how do these black cats, and in England, I am so incredulous of the great cats and lions and tigers, and I mean, that appear in Great Britain.
They're all over the planet, Brad.
They're all over the planet, but they don't belong all over the planet.
No,
the big cats only belong in kind of a very kind of already charted out neighborhood, you know, where they should be. They shouldn't be straying. And there again, I have this theory, fantasy, can hyphenate it if you wish, of this tiger that takes a leap in India and ends up in New England.
What about these dogs that herald incoming disaster, impending doom?
Yeah, and I think in those cases, I think we have, and I've had this theory bouncing around in my head for quite a while. It's Halloween time now. Almost every local newspaper will be running a story of a convent that burned down in the 1800s and a phantom nun is seen. And sure enough, some people report her every year. And there are especially a number of great dogs, dog ghosts, that phantoms that are seen, who save their masters at the bank of the river, and now their spirit appears because they drowned while saving their master. I think if enough people see these, and you look at the cases, especially in England, of the black dog heralding, then I think we have instances where we're creating psychic marionettes. Enough people believe, enough people see, and pretty soon that phantom takes on a life of its own. I also have another theory that the reason we have so many great black dog stories in England is because of the Viking raids. The Vikings, of course, have the theory of Fenrir, the great wolf that's so fierce it's been chained until Judgment Day. And on that last day, even the gods will be afraid when it breaks loose and swallows all of humanity. So the Vikings land with their stories of the great black Fenrir, the great black wolf, and I think pretty soon the inhabitants of England are also seeing this phantom black dog. And it always indicates, it never indicates good news. You know, it never appears and, you know, oh, I must be going to win the lottery. No, it appears and bad days are coming.
Tell me a little bit more about the boogeyman.
Well, this was a theory, again, I worked out in great detail one time with a correspondent. He, as a young boy, he was at his cousin's, and they're playing hide-and-seek. I mean, what kids haven't done that? You know, the adults are sitting there talking politics, and the kids, especially in that era, there wasn't TV, so, you know, you play hide-and-seek or you play some game. So he's running upstairs, and he hides under a bed, and then he hears footsteps coming up, and he thinks, oh, that's one of my cousins coming up. Sure. I just got to lie really still. And he hears the footsteps coming closer and closer, and then he sees the feet of a wolf. Now, he's having definitely, you know, a logic leap here. Where did the wolf come from? He hears the breathing. He can hear aspects as it moves around, and then the tension as he peeks out from underneath, and he sees this strange, not what he would think of as a ghost or a phantom. He sees kind of the Walt Disney version of the wolf and the three little pigs, you know, the wolf with the top hat, the whole thing. Yeah. And this is the thing, what is the sense of it? So we correspond quite a while about this, and I said, well, maybe, you know, they made the impression. And he said, I didn't see that cartoon until I was an adult. You know, I didn't get to go to movies that much when I was a kid. What is the projection of certain objects that will communicate something to one person and something to another? Do we have truly, because every culture has its version of the boogeyman. Are there really entities that have it as their task? You know, the seeing that, we wait for the good fairy to bring us that when we have a tooth, you know, we put it under the pillow and leaves us a quarter. Used to be a nickel in my day. Now it's probably a dollar. I don't know. But we have those images of the Sandman coming. Maybe these are actual entities. Maybe these are actual projections that have been with us. Maybe these are truly like goblins and elves and so forth, who take it as their task, a kind of nurturing aspect, which is also frightening to us, but they see to it that children are being kept in check, or more importantly, children are being shown that there is a reality beyond their day-to-day existence.
And then parents screw that up for them, Brad.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Yes, they do.
Demons from the Dark Side. What's that chapter all about?
Well, demons, increasingly, I think we are, one of the largest reports or cries for help that we receive are people who are convinced, sincere people who are convinced they're under demonic attack. Now, as you know, I have called these entities ever since we've been talking. I don't call them demons because I think that brings in a religious aspect, but spirit parasites. I think these are entities that have never been human, but take great delight in possessing and occupying our bodies for a time. But I use demons because, you know, that's kind of instantly translatable. And what we have are more and more cases of people who feel that they, because these are the end times in some people's cosmology,
we're reaching a time when the veil is getting thinner between worlds in other people's cosmology. And I think we are having an onset of malignant entities coming from the other side because they feel it's their mission to screw us up the best they can, the most they can. There are so many cases in which, and a lot of psychiatrists are taking this seriously.
Finally.
A lot of psychiatrists are taking this care, and they will write to me and say that they can actually communicate with the demon, and it's not in a vernacular that the possessed would use. Much more high tone, sometimes a lot of Latin words thrown in, testing. It really is kind of the classic kind of exorcism or possession cases, but now we're seeing that so many people who unfortunately have been put into institutions are probably legitimately possessed. I also, in that same chapter, and that's where a lot of gruesome things come in, I'm sorry.
You did pile a lot in that one.
I piled a lot in that one. I know. But these are people who have committed truly hideous and ghastly, gruesome acts while they were possessed. And then, interestingly, and I know you noticed this, so many of them, as they're sitting there in court or as they're sitting there in therapy, maybe suddenly it's as if they awaken and they have no knowledge of what they've done. Well, psychiatrists may have different names for this, but then if we allow for the possibility of possession, the demon, the spirit parasite, has had his way. Its way, I should say. He has had its way. He has enjoyed slaughtering a human being. He has enjoyed taking another soul. He has enjoyed using a human body. He has enjoyed all the obscene acts that he has made this individual commit. And now he's on his way to find another victim.
I got to tell you, the stories you've accumulated, and there are many more, we'll talk about some of them tonight, are just absolutely riveting. Tell me a little bit about dinosaurs that still live out here on the planet.
Oh, I've always,
I like this stuff.
I love those. Now, you and I talked, I don't know, but one Halloween, I don't remember how many years ago.
Many.
We talked about the Payusa,
yep.
Remember?
Yep.
And both of us had confessed that was one of our favorite stories. This story of the, on the Mississippi, they see that.
Alton. Yep.
Alton, Illinois. Yeah. They saw, and in the early days, the early priests and so forth, missionaries, saw this huge cave painting up on the overlooking the river. And the legend there is that this huge creature would swoop down and take members of the tribe. And when they, and as I said, I was so fortunate, I actually got a hold of an ancient leather-bound book from the 1800s written by a missionary who had investigated the cave. Finally, someone crawled up to the cave and looked in. And by his testimony, it was littered with human skulls and bones.
Oh, oh.
And this...
they were grabbed.
Yeah, they were grabbed indeed by this. And you know, that's, we theorized then, and I theorized in the book, that this indeed could have been a survival, you know, of one of the great winged beings.
Taken there like a nest, Brad, wasn't it?
Like a nest. And the legend, of course, goes that one great chief, and this was so popular in every legend around the world.
He killed one of them.
Yeah, he drove it off. Because they would put out, you know, a young maiden to be sacrificed. I don't know why it always has to be a young maiden.
Well,
but I suppose there's all kinds of symbolism.
It was a classic. Brad, we're going to talk about a headless horseman when we come back. And take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.